Taylor Matan, everything is ready. South Africa is once again showing that there's somebody that told me that they're looking at the wrong page. Actually,
nothing to do with housing. It is just it was just an opportune moment that the project has also now been done. So, but essentially we're all ready. So with this last session, we've agreed that we're not going to use, remember, members, that we had the individual CETA representatives over the last 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. So we've now moved from understanding what the department indicated, the repositioning of that landscape, to hearing now from the CEOs and the chairpersons and the board representatives about the actual details when it comes to each CETA. And we are able to fortunately analyze it on the back of the questionnaire that we've circulated. Again, we've, at some stage, Professor O'Connell was met by myself and our whip, just in the context of how are we able to just get support on that analysis around the questionnaire? Because in the next 3 months, there will be announcement around the new landscape for the next 5 years when it comes to the CETAs. And it's important that we have some form of engagement on it. We've also met the legal representative of Parliament, just around reflecting on the landscape process and ensuring that the voice of our people through Parliament will be heard in that particular process. Member Bukuza, welcome back. And I don't know why our whip is smiling. But we're glad that you're back, because you are contributing safe and sound, contributing to our committee in a very positive and constructive way. We've also got a member of the ruling party within this committee, Member Magazi. She's looking down deliberately, so she is a very active member of the communications committee. And that, it's very clear to me that communications, whether it's second parliament, third parliament, or fourth parliament, it's a very active committee, that one. In the context of appointments and a range of other stuff. So member, thank you for being here. We know that you are here. But also we know that you have at times real serious operational responsibilities. But I think you also left the country over the last week.
Yes.
Also welcome back. And I think Member Mashwana, we've requested her to yesterday meet, there was a request from an NGO from Ireland, and we requested people from basic education and higher education and training to meet. And so thank you also for standing in. With that, Professor O'Connell, welcome to our committee. This is the Committee on Higher Education and Training. It is a relatively young committee, new, based on the new landscape of education. And we've reflected over the last 10 months around education. We've met Higher Education South Africa. We've met every institution that's accountable to Parliament. We've met National Student Financial Aid Scheme. We've met, we've actually had oversight visits to universities of technologies as well as certain universities and colleges. And we can say that we're excited about the new landscape, not of CETA, I'm talking about the educational landscape. However, we are concerned around the actual implementation and ensuring that things are happening. So I've invited Professor just to give a sense, because at the Mr. Spain Summit, he in fact presented, and at some other national and international engagements, presented challenges on education globally, continentally, as well as in the local environment. So, Professor, over to you.
Thank you, Professor.
presentation. I'm afraid I can't speak for a city. I'm going to stand and I'm going to make an argument. And it's an argument that reflects actually upon the why. I have a sense that in your Buddhist that we have a great deal of attention to the what's been done and the how it's been done. But unless there is an embedded sense of the why's got to be done, what's actually been occurring is just instrumental. And there's no real motivation in this. You see that it's been asked of you because you understand how significant the why is. And so I thought that it might be good for me to engage with you with a particular understanding of the why and then some concerns about the what and the how. So I pose the question, why the South African nation, where to the interesting change? I pose that way because there is no possibility at all of South Africa succeeding if the rest of Southern Africa doesn't change. It just cannot happen. There are so many consequences of failure there. And South Africa is trying to stop Southern Africa down dramatically and directly. So whatever South Africa thinks and does, it's got to keep in mind the fact that the same sort of thing is not happening elsewhere. It should be encouraged elsewhere. But when good things are happening elsewhere, that we must embrace them. So that's it. I would ask you to follow this argument with me and see where it goes. We know that the first birth, think of a renaissance. Renaissance is about birth, nothing but growth. The first birth of humankind is out of Africa. And there's a picture, a diagram of how it happened. There, in that area there, down, up all the time. And the colors show you can see Africa, the blue, and the rest of it all depends on us. So that's the first birth. And it's the birth that gives us a great stature and honor, but it's also a birth that gives us a great responsibility. The second birth of the knowledge matter, and I'm speaking now about Africa and knowledge. The second birth is up in Alexandria, where 3,000 years before Christ, great things begin to happen in that part of the world, and eventually result in the most glorious fight of educational resource the entire world at the time had. Africa at the time was the leader in new knowledge. So very coming in. And then because of a number of things happened, some of that disappeared, and we have to wait until 22, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th century to become a site. And this is the furthest south it comes in that form. The site of knowledge and storing of knowledge and the dissemination of knowledge and scholars moving into Timbuktu from all over Africa to try and particularly Africa, the southern part of Africa, to partake in this exploration, intellectual exploration and the intellectual contestation that goes with it. One of the consequences of inviting new knowledge in is that it does something to you. You can't remain the same as a consequence of having engaged with it. Or you can choose to remain the same. And that new knowledge has had no impact on you whatsoever. This, I would argue, is a very, very dangerous path to follow. No institution, no group, no nation is complete on its own. There's just too much happening around it for you to believe that all the answers already lie within it. So that's for Africa and the third birth, third renaissance. Because we lost that edge, because Africa lost the edge of Alexandria, when it was right at the top of the knowledge project, when these things came, that's the tuberculosis, when it came, we could not respond to it dramatically and quickly as other parts of the world were able to respond to it. Because by then they had developed new ways of understanding and thinking as a consequence of continued interaction. So we slow with respect to this, and TB does that to us. We slow with respect to HIV, and HIV does that to us. And other parts of the world are far more successful. Part of India's struggle, part of China's struggle, but there are parts of India and China that are not engaging with the possibilities of what knowledge is about currently, but as they, I suppose, develop, and so that will change. And then malaria. We struggled with something that the rest of the world has dealt with. between North America and South America, there's the Panama Canal. When they decided to build that, they asked Ferdinand de Lesser, the French engineer who had built the Suez Canal, to come and build the Panama Canal. He failed miserably. He failed because his workers died at the rate of 1 out of every 2. And they died from malaria. There was no way there they could build that canal. And then they would find out, well, how do we deal with this? Of course, science was beginning to develop up here. And with the help of the science available up here, they dealt with the mosquito, the malaria, and the canal was built. We were slow with this, but it's as a consequence of a history. Now, I want to make that point so that there is an understanding that there is nothing wrong with us. We've had a particular form of history, but we now have an opportunity to transcend that past if we are open to the transcending. So this is what happens as a consequence of that. There are huge consequences of not having access to all the different kinds of knowledge. Huge consequences. And we see this. Zimbabwe currently, the latest of Zimbabwe, has a female life expectancy of 34 years and a male life expectancy of 38. It's already there. It's already there. This was South Africa. There we are, three. And that was the prediction. We've had, as a consequence of the fact that we've done quite a bit now with antiretrovirals and other, we're pushing that back. But look at the trajectory that we were on, all of us. They were going, more and more kids were going to school. And all the right things were happening, the population was beginning to decline. And so this is the classical path of development, where a population declines, education increases, and all kinds of other powers are then developed, and you're able to hold your own. So this, we were all on our way there. These did not have that. But somehow they protected themselves. And there are many reasons why this has happened in this part of the world. I'll give you one or two of them. That, A nation is vulnerable to penetration of something like HIV when there is incredible movement into and out of it. Okay? And South Africa, because it's got the largest economy in Africa, has a great deal of movement in and out. These big trucks come and they go and they come and they go and they come. So they're into the culture constantly becomes a force. The force could be your husband, comes from somewhere else. And that force is a trusted force. And as a consequence, there's no wariness about what is the danger there because this force went and spent some time in another part of the world. So when you see some very poor countries, but they are isolated, and where the values have remained intact, HIV has not been able to take hold of them. It's where it's loosened up, and the cultural values are no longer strongly embedded, and men go and they do things, and they come back and they do things, and, well, that's it. But knowledge. That's not strange, this thing that happened. Alexandria, Timbuktu, and then a collapse. And there was a collapse. No knowledge, modern knowledge being created. The Greek and Roman empires were once great. They were at the very peak of the knowledge production processes, and they collapsed. And then what follows after that is the collapse of European culture. It's called the Age of the Barbarians, or the Dark Ages, or the Medieval Age, many names for it. But this is what happened. The ruling system collapsed, the state of government collapsed, schools collapsed, libraries collapsed, currencies collapsed, land common language, the cities and towns destroyed, transportation difficult between them, bureaucracy dominates. You now have a very narrow source of knowledge. In that case, it develops as the Catholic Church, becomes very strong, and everything it says is the truth. And as a consequence of which, the new truths available were then pushed aside. It happened later with Islam. Remember, there was a time when the Muslim Empire was incredibly at the very forefront of intellectual activity, especially with math and science. Mm. There are great, great thinkers in that part of the world. What happens when theocracy takes over and the mullahs and the priests start controlling, they direct you away from that. They even contest with some of that, and they push you then into areas where you suddenly we stop being open to all kinds of different knowledge. And so this happens. It happens. And so it's not anything that they did wrong. It's the history and circumstance. It's the point I make because often when I think we South Africans won't face up to what has actually happened here with respect to education, it's because we feel if we do, then we're saying there's something wrong with us. It's a history that we are dealing with. And how do we locate ourselves in that history? How do we see the opportunities and how do we grasp them in order to transcend those difficult times? This is a citadel, concept of a citadel. What is a citadel? It's a castle, a fort. Why were they built? They were built because of the vulnerability of the people living around them. At the time, there were no the Bills of Rights then, and no constitutions, and no court of law that could protect people. And so at any time the Vikings could come or the Moors could come, and they occupy. And so what happens is that these people run into that citadel with thick walls, and they press up their moats around, and they pull up the drawbridge, and they say, now we're safe, and now we attack those people from the top. So that was a place of safety. People, that there was our thing. Now, the question is, what are the places of safety in the modern world? Those are not the places of safety any longer, because Russia, China, America, and Europe, the European countries, came from the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, dropped a bomb right into the middle of the thing, 3,000 miles away. So that's not any longer possible. So what are the modern citadels? Where are they? How do they? Where do we go when something comes at us and we need to be protected? So what happened in Africa? Why is it that Africa was so vulnerable when these new challenges came? Vulnerable because of the Sahara Desert. Now, the Sahara Desert is an incredible thing. You see it there? There was a time when this was verdant, with the lushless growth, when our ancestors started moving out here. This happens later. So this Sahara Desert does a number of things. It cuts off sub-Saharan Africa from easy contact with this part of the world. Now, what is this part of the world? It's the Mediterranean world. And going across the east, it's the Arab world, the Persian world. Going right across the east, the Chinese world. So while all of this is happening in human history, for thousands of years, the Romans, for instance, while all of that is happening, a new knowledge is being created, algebra is being created, forms of science being created. Sub-Saharan Africa makes it impossible for that knowledge to penetrate. Remember, there were no planes to just fly over, and people had come through the desert. And that's why Timbuktu is such an incredible thing, that it was so significant that people made those journeys in order to get there. They wanted to get at the knowledge that had been stored there over hundreds of years. Actually, 500 or 600 years. So, this is what happened, one of the things that happened. They cut off from. So life in sub-Saharan Africa is different from life along here. What is happening here? People have religions, and they worship their God. And somebody else comes, got a different religion. Now the two of them box it out, or they accommodate, and out of this comes a new thing. And there's another third religion. And so there is contestation with the culture. The culture is consistently under stress from outside forces, and the culture consistently is changing. And the more changeable the culture, the greater the chances of survival, because it's taking in the best of what it finds. The cultures don't say, go away. We already have it here. We don't need you. That was not what happened up here. Huge cultural contestation. And out of this develops the Christianity and all kinds of other religions. So, that's one thing. Go back to that other slide. What happened? North Africa, incredible cultural challenges, limited penetration. Tribal conflicts, there was lots of internecine strife. We know about the Mfokana, the Tshakana in South here with Chaka and how that sends people scurrying all over into Zimbabwe and everywhere else. So there was no court of law or no territory that says this is mine and you can't come in here. It was rough and tumble stuff at the time. So that was there. Then the colonial period, the conquest and the destruction of kingdoms, the destruction of cultures, but no expansion of the new knowledge into the culture. Simply accepting the culture and holding it and softening it, but not giving it opportunities to engage with what is new. And so these colonials have no interest at all in the renaissance of the culture. None at all. All they want to do is to occupy and extract. The only part that's different is here in the Western Cape, where the colonials come in larger numbers and they settle. So this is an important part of the new colonials, given under apartheid, had expansion of access but low funding. They were not interested in the renaissance of education in this part of the world. They were interested, they did give expansion of access eventually in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. The schools started, more schools started being built, but the funding was lowered as a consequence of which the schools were never encouraged to really grab hold of science and develop their competencies. The struggle. Now, the struggle is often thought of in very narrow terms. The struggle against apartheid, the way it was fought essentially for a long time through schools and schooling. What madness is it? Brought us freedom far faster than we would have got without us. But with respect to education, it was devastating. It turned what little there was of a learning culture on its head. The Livingstons, the Cressys, the Newtowns, the Fort Hares, they were vibrant places of learning. Small, but vibrant. Comes the culture struggle and turned on its head. And all of that disappears. In other words, education or the knowledge project is set aside. Because there's another thing to be fought for you. Well, one can understand that. And so that's all of our effort behind defeating this thing so that what? We are now free to embrace the knowledge and have the renaissance that we couldn't have because of our history and because of the way these apartheid people have treated us. So what would we have expected in 1994? A complete and utter explosion of knowledge energy. That was the expectation. We spent 20 years fighting through that. We want education. And then we find something very different out. So by 1994, and this is the truth, unfortunately, we arrived in 1994 with no strong modern learning culture. We don't have, as a consequence of struggle, struggle didn't bring for us a learning culture. In actual fact, struggle did the opposite. One is not to diminish it, but from historical views, to face it up. And so we still struggle today with this problem. The principals, the teachers, were people of stature. You know that in your community. Yeah. Are they that now?
No,
not at all. Would a child in our time ever have gone up and told the teacher to go there? Wouldn't it happen? Because that's not how a school was thought of by our community. Struggle brought that about as we missed. We were too superficial in our analysis of what it is we were struggling for and how we were to behave. And the big learning there is that process is everything. Because the process you use in order to gain whatever you wish to gain lies, holds within itself the seed of how that thing is going to be. If you start smashing around people in order to be successful, when you empower, the environment is going to be still a smashing environment. And so we sit now with that legacy of all of that, thousands of years of exclusion because of sub-Saharan. There are 400 or 500 years of exclusion because of the colonials, the apartheid exclusion, and now, since 1994, we're excluding ourselves. We are. We own this country now. Of its own future. So why would they be arresting all the teachers? Why would they not be going to school today? There's something that hasn't clicked. And that's the why. How do we get the why clicked and go on and say, hey, this is ours now. We're still operating as if we're in struggle. Yeah? We're still there in our heads. Okay. Let's see. 2010, and this is my analysis, we still have no modern learning culture. In other words, in the last 16 years, we've not created one. And let me show you the proof. So, there are different ways of knowing. And unfortunately, often, one creates a binary between them. You say you're either A or B. You're either A and C or Co. Yeah? That's all the truth. But that's not what the dialectic is, not in Marxist terms anywhere. The dialectic is the flowing in and out of different thoughts and different forces. And out of this comes something new, something better, something that takes you to the next level. But we don't see it like that. We see that A fighting B, and A fights B, and A's in charge. Now, that's not dialectic. That's the same struggle. I mean, the next one is just the stuff. After a while, B gets its act together, it starts mobilizing, it starts attacking A, and eventually, that's not a dialectic. The dialectic is a new level of consciousness of the whole. So, what have we got? We have metaphysical ways of knowing, theological ways of knowing, that's the churches, the gods, ideological ways of knowing, that's the party, the faith ways of knowing, traditional ways of knowing, they all are valid. You have metaphysical ways of knowing, when you say, well, we know that there is some spirit about there, but we don't know quite that it is, but we're also interested in science, and then we have scientific ways of knowing. They're not in opposition to one another. You choose the one that has the best resonance with the challenge facing. Point. I have a grandmother. She died about 3 years ago. Now, she's my inspiration. She was when I was alive. She was sick. You know, a big problem, human problem. Sit down the corner and say, Granny, let's talk. When I'm asked by somebody, what do you think about nuclear, pebble bed nuclear technology? I can't go to Granny. Granny knew nothing about that. Nothing. I must go to a scientist and say, look, what are the different ways of understanding this thing? Just using the appropriate knowledge for appropriate purposes. And so when someone says there's an HIV virus, You run to the scientists because they know about viruses. And someone else says, but you know, your body can be strengthened to fight the virus if you eat these sorts of things. There's no reason why they're at odds with one another. But we think in binary. We think in binary ways. Either A or B. And if you're in A, you can't be with B. I tell you my dilemma as a rector. I greet every dignitary who comes to our university, political dignitary, the heads of the party. So, now this happens every time. So, along comes Jacob Zuma, then the whispers go, yeah, Arnold, ANC. Then along comes Sarah, hey, look at you, go. Because we still think in binary. It maps up for us the enemy. We're into enemies. We're not into building. We're into always finding who we're against. Not good sense. Not in this time of the time. So, here's the discussion. So again, the African and Renaissance. The good news, and that's the good news. Homo sapiens and us, we cultural creatures. We make and we make others. That's the Marx said that, we make and we make others. We cultural creatures. What does that mean? It means that we have more than any other being, any other species, we're able to transcend our instinct. Our instinct says, make war, our instinct says, fight, and we say, no, let's talk about it. Let's see if we can find another thing. It's cultural creatures. We are born capable of being anything. If you were born in the United States of America, if this is a language you'd be using, but you'd be speaking like this, wow, how are you, man? The second thing you will have in your head is, I must always be this, and bugger the rest. That's what's in the American psyche. They teach the youngsters this. Devil takes the hindmost. Don't be a loser. You watch TV? You hear the word saying he's a loser. He's a loser. Why is he a loser? Because he's a nice guy and he's not going on. So that's what he would be thinking. If he was born in Cuba, he'd say, well, I'm now not going to ask for a raise because to ask for a raise puts more pressure on the system. And as a consequence of which they're not going to be able to build more houses, I will be satisfied with my little different culture. So we learn to be this. And we can learn to be anything. We can be this on the one day. And we can be something else tomorrow. So we know that too. Good leaders can become really bad leaders in a very short time. So when that happens, we're in the trouble. So he says we are human because we have five humanizing factors, five things that make us human. We have the longest childhood of any species. For 6, 7, 8 years, a child is still helpless. No other species. The child gets up, the mother gives it down, up, and it's running because the jackal is coming or someone. We're not like that. We've learned, and in that time we nurture, and we teach the child what it is to be human. The child sees and the child hears and becomes part of it. And then we've got the organization. No other species done. We've got a problem, right? It's for the task team. Let's get a committee going. So we've got all of these ways. And we've got a big problem. There are so many children that must be educated. In the old days, the child used to watch the father, and the child goes and look at, does work with the sheep and comes back, father, so he didn't do that problem. Now we've got so many. How do we do this? Well, let's create schools. We need now to have knowledge of the highest possible kind. Once upon a time, it was the shaman, it was the person who had access to the spirits, was the intellectual leader. Now we say, that also, but also building with us. So we do this in order to deal with problems. Language, you know this, great instrument. But we don't become fixated on it. Language is not you. Language is the sounds that were made in the place where you lived, and you let those sounds and you speak and you use them, but it doesn't define you. Once upon a time, it was necessary for language to define you. Why? Because there were no rules and no laws. And so I think Marty has come along, and I don't know him. I'm worried about him, because there's a good chance that he will attack me and he wants to take my wife or my things. And I speak to him, because by speaking to him and he answers, I can place him. The minute he opens his mouth, he says he's not one of us. So it was a defense thing initially. But we've made this a defining thing. I had an incredible meeting about 3 years with 2 Cubans. Both of them very senior in Cuba. And they said, I said, what are the 2 big challenges facing Cuba? They said, well, the one is our infrastructure. It's falling apart. Okay? And the second is, we're trying desperately to get access to English. We're getting our people now working into English. So I said to him, don't you have an ideological problem with that? They said, why? English is not England's language. English is like math. It's a technology. And lots of people use it. And to be able to have access to those people and their thinking, we use it. And we need it. no politics behind it, no ideology behind it, simply a mechanism to empower us to be able to engage with others. Oh, what a head, you know. This is a walking away from ideology and from culture and saying that's important. He said made it important. So, advance in most benign natural period in human history. This is an important sentence. All of these advances take place in the most benign natural period in human history. The time when our ancestors first became human, or when God created Adam and Eve, up till now, has been an easy time. There have been some ice ages, and there has been no severe prolonged period of heat. It's been an easy time. That time is now changing. So whatever task, way in which one thought, the time one had in order to develop new ways of knowing, it's no longer available to us. The change is so fast and so dramatic that we have to do a triple jump while others have to do a long jump because of our past. And so there's a big challenge to us. We must show the world and ourselves that we have the competence and the capability to do what no nation on this earth has been asked to do. We can transcend the past by like consciousness. Nothing wrong with our brain. If we accepted that there's something wrong with our brain, then we're very spoiled about it.
Something is itching in me,
yes,
about language.
That's right. I just made an argument.
Okay.
I'm not arguing the point.
Yeah.
I'm telling you about them. And how he defines it. Yes, I understand that.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm a Catholic. Condom keeps with me for a long time.
And I agree with you.
Yeah, you agree with me. Yeah. You see, so this is the difference. This is the dialectic. How do we come some. Okay, here we go. We'll have the debate now. Advance the most benign part. Now, this is finished. It's finished. That benign part is over. The time when you can go outside and chop some trees and let the fire is gone. The time when you could go outside and walk a little way and the water was there, it's gone. New time. Now what? Can our old ways of thinking and being deal with the new? That's the only question we must ask. And faster we can. My grandmother and her heart, her love for people and for me, it shines throughout my entire being. And I draw on this all the time. But I must also have my head in the other area. Also be able to do Boyle's law and Hooke's law without giving me the principles and Euclidean geometry. Gotta do that! Otherwise I'm lost. I can't then build the dams. I can't purify the water. I can't create an alternative energy. I can't do that! You know, what happens to me next? Okay. So, shortly then, and we're running far. 200,000, that's when humans first appear. Now this is an important factor. Important. By 1950, the world has 2.5 billion people. What does that mean? It means it took almost 200,000 years of human existence to create 2.5 billion people. You got that? 200,000 years created 2.5 billion of us. 40 years later, we doubled it. 40 years later, we added another 2.5. Now, can you just imagine what this means? So much water was there. 40 years later, I needed twice as much. So much electricity was there. 40 years later, I needed twice as much. The road, it's just an enormous thing. And if this catapults away, then you might as well sit down and give up. Because there's no way on God's earth that the resources needed to hold on to growing population is possible. It's not possible. We're already struggling as much as we are, and so that's a big show. And then Africa, 221 billion. In 1950, by 1997 on. Lagos, you understand Lagos now.
Yeah.
But that's the good news. The bad news is, just 40 years from now, Lagos will double in size. From here to forward. Nigeria will have 300 million people. Just 40 years from now. That's the trend. Now, how in devil's name do we deal with that? Using old things. Where is the energy going to come from? We're already struggling. So now we've got this big uproar. Eskom may have done terrible things and they may have poisoned. But there's no doubt at all, if we don't get those power stations from Eskom, done, they're finished. You're going to run off. Now, I don't understand why the government doesn't speak this way. And I love the debate out there and people mobilize and they say we're going to stop Eskom from. Why doesn't it say, look, guys, this is the trajectory forward. Without Eskom, we're dead. There'll be no light shining yet.
in this part of the world. There will be no factories working on this part of the world. It's a different kind of argument which you've got to do with against it. Alright, I want to go very quickly now. South Africa, population 1950, 30 million? 39 million. That's 40 years later. We tripled. We went from 30 to 39. Now can you see what this does to government? Government is being asked to build houses. How many? It has its projections. And tomorrow they're wrong. And then, what is the discourse to our people? What are the fundamental causes? What are the fundamental levers? Play the game as the politics of it all. Put two people together and they go at each other. What line here that everyone must know and everyone must share? So that when we engage with this, we engage with aggression. The biggest argument I'm having at the moment with the communist youth at UWC is the way they're speaking. I get the sense that they think that all you've got to do is to tomorrow declare this country a socialist country and everything happens for you. In other words, the water comes, the electricity comes, the roads come. How?
They must ask Nicaragua what happened.
Precisely. Falls apart. So it's sense making. It doesn't mean we can't go there. But we've got to know exactly what we're doing and the stages. This is what Marx was trying to say. He was trying to say, look guys, you use these phases in order to build your competence. So finally, when we enter into the new heaven, people all have a different consciousness. And their consciousness is that they love one another. And also, they have available to them incredible resources because they were part of the process of creating it. Well, Russia doesn't follow the truth. It's an agrarian country, it makes it communist, and as a consequence of which, it's got a 4 to 5 year plan, never make a change in consciousness, 70 years later, it's all the top. Yeah? Cuba has gone better. Where the consciousness starts, remember, Cuba's the one incredible advantage, it's an island. If you put Cuba tomorrow next to Canada, in the United States, then you might check to see what happens to the people. Mm. How many will stay here when they see what they Now they've got an island. So as I say, always an island is always a bad model. Because things happen on islands, as Darwin told us, that don't happen anywhere. But that's another thing. Yeah. Yeah, Darwin says, this is what's facing us humans now. For the first time in human history, this. In other words, it's not the past that's our problem. It's what's happening now and going to happen. So our perspective cannot be a past perspective. It's got to be asking all the future questions and making its decisions. So the EFCOM matter is a no-brainer. Following this, it's a no-brainer. This is what we've got to have, and it must be sacrificed. One thing our government hasn't done well is haven't spoken to our people. Just about how savage the past it was, how brutal it was, how damaging it was, and why we will have difficulty in transcending it, and why we all have to make sacrifices. What do we do instead of this? And I'm critical of this, and I've done it publicly, of the concept of the notion of service delivery. I think it's a terrible concept. Why? Because it creates in the mind of a person that you must sit and government will deliver. You ask any person out there what service delivery to water, electricity, houses, jobs, the whole lot. Now, where are you in it? I mean, you have to ask this person to say, you have done all these incredible things with community development, but none of it is available to the students. I said, God, you're in here. You are part of this. Why aren't you in one of those? It's a thing that's in our heads that somehow has not permitted us to understand we are the country. We've won this other battle, the political battle. The battle forward, whether our political or ideological, we will fight, but we will do it in a way that doesn't damage, it doesn't do what struggle did to education as we go forward. Because if you go on with that kind of thing, as Thomas Hobbes said, there's two things you mustn't do. If you want to develop, two things you must not do. You mustn't go to war. There's no good war. Sometimes it's necessary. But the outcome is not good. The outcome is the change of the leadership. But what's around it? The wreckage that now has to be dealt with. That's the one thing. He said, the second thing is, don't believe ever that you can do everything on your own. You have a different way of doing it, and you're always magic. We tried that a few times too, eh? We tried the magic with HIV NAIDS. We tried the magic with curriculum 2005. The fun I was trying magic too. Remember they picked up all these coaches? Remember they came here? They said, no, we don't do that. We don't run around a few 50 times. We only go two times and then we do the little dances on the board. Well, you can do that, but you can't expect to win a World Cup. You can't expect to be a player. We can make any choices we want to make. But the question is, will those choices indeed
or will they? Let it go. So these were the three challenges we inhabit. Those are the mass members of the democratic state. Integrate ourselves into the competitive arena of international production finance. Now, some socialists say, we don't want that. Well, I got bad news for them. I was at a function about 3 years ago when a very, very senior second in command in China was speaking. And said, China has got socialism of a special kind in its economy. Mm. Vietnam, you see Vietnam. Vietnam has got a Politburo and all those things, but their economy is cooking. Mm. It's cooking because that's the world. You can't say, I'm going to stand here and the rest of you go, we'll find our own way to do this thing. It's not possible. If you must engage it, and you must change mindset, but you can't stand outside of it. So how do we become a player? And then how do we deal with the wreckage of apartheid? That's the wreckage of apartheid. Terrible, terrible. Those are our three big challenges. I don't think, I've not heard any government official, any president or whatever, address our nation in these sorts of terms. Speak to our people. You know, I want to plead with you, if you can get the time, to ask the president if he will, on a Monday night at about 7 o'clock, ask all South Africans to be around television or a radio, he wants to talk. Then he must sketch for us what the story is. How we are at the moment battling into an abyss. And if we don't change the way we think and act, we've had it. We can have all of these little fights, and we can have capital and socialism and whatever else. They can all fight. At the end of it, they do not produce for this country the competence to deal in the modern world. In this all that will happen is that we begin to fight another, and there's a civil war here, that Africa will integrate. And history will say they had it. They had so much going for them, and they didn't know. I'm going to rush to the last few, and then the dream, that's the dream, eh? How? Didn't just be that. Be that too. And that's a nice setting, everything. My grandfather grew up in the house I had in the 60s. Yeah. Everyone wants a transport of some kind. Some want the Americans want the long ones, you know, that's bigger than a box. Yeah. Brainlessness. Small car perhaps, bicycle better. Let's see. I'm not too happy with the way the taxes are getting, but other ones. We all want work, we want good family life. We don't want that. But there's nothing that said God would prevent Sudan from not getting there. It would prevent Ethiopia from not getting there. There's no special relationship. Mm. We're ordinary people. They've got their struggles, we've got ours. What could they not do as a consequence? It led to them. What wasn't there for them to do? Did they have the capacity to get the medicine there fast enough? To get the water there fast enough? What else? And that's one of the saddest things today. That Marseille is waiting for that child to die. He's already picked the victim. Oh. This kid is almost gone. Mm. And he can stop. Now, that's a fanciful, that's a real. It's in our continent. Why can't it happen here? Who says it can't? 10 years? How long does it take for a culture to fall apart? How long? It can happen like that. So,
it's happening already.
It happens. Yeah. That's what we've got to hold on. So how can we respond? All of these great people, all of them. I've got Castro in there, I've got Mao in there, because I'm always running up against these socialists who tell me the communists tell me, look, don't tell them coolest. Oh, come on, I'm not this country. I'm telling a story. I run up against them and they say to me, yeah, but Mao. I say, you go to China. The industry of the Chinese people is incredible. They work like hell from morning till night. They go to university, they study. You can't go to a university and think that you can mess around there. You're out on your ear the next day, man. They're not playing the fool. We think we can be free libertarians with all the rights to do what we want to do, and the state must pay for it. That's where we've got to in our heads. Yeah? So far, we slid away from the orthodoxy. We don't understand Marx. We don't understand the capitalist world. We don't understand the socialist world. We're creating a thing here all of our own. Exclusivity once again. Okay, we must also be able to do that. It must lie within your confidence to do that, as it must lie within your confidence to deal with HIV/AIDS and TBM. You can also have your, those people, they've got shrines to so many different gods. So many different gods. They don't fight one another about, one doesn't say, well, you're a Christian, you're a Muslim. To get on. So, sense making. This is perhaps the most important of all the time. This is the South Africa we inherited in 1994. 10%, maybe 12 or 15 now, maybe 20 now, have moved up into the middle class bracket. With the other day, it was quite extraordinary at UWC. We came to speak to the students about free education. He's been sent, I'm sure, to say to them, it's not going to happen. But he didn't know, I asked myself, how are we going to say it? How are we going to say it? This is what Webster is. You don't get it. This is what Webster is. We've got the money for free education. Wow. We've got it. We want to give it to you. But, you see, it's the BEs. They've got all. They've taken the money. So we can't give it to you because the BEs have the money. That was his way. Our will is there. You see, it's an absence of facing up. This is a poor country. If you want to pay for a student's fee to go to university, you must demand that student he walk out of there with an A-class degree after 3 years. You've got to demand it because it's a valuable resource. You're giving a resource. You're not saying, here's a gift for you because what I was oppressed. So, sense-making. But this, the big part of the sense-making is, how do you change this? This is what's in the answer. How do we change it? How do we take it? This can never get there because this should never have been. This was the youth. This is America and the use of the resources to a few to be able to create that. This could never have been. I say if we can get there, we're doing well. Cuba, sort of thing, eh? Good health, good education. Get there. But one way people think of it is we take all of this, that's Malema's business at the moment. Take all the mines and you redistribute it there. You know what the outcome of that will be? When the entire wealth of that 10% redistributed to the total number at the bottom. Remember, 10%, 90%. Once you shift that money, this is where the outcome is. It's marginal. I'll give an example of this to have this understanding. 1996, Stuff 2 and 1995. Stuff 2 and the state signed an agreement on pupil teacher ratio, okay? 35 and 40. So, I was head of education at the time, yeah, and I had to do that, to get rid of 8,500 teachers. The point is, when we were struggling, what did we have in our mind about what schools would look like post our victory? We thought our schools would look like Rhodes, or like Sachs, or like Bishop. That's what we were fighting for. We had classes. And Webster and Tatu and NEC, they have big badges like that. Small classes. 20-1, 15-1, that sort of class. Once you put money to that, you begin to see what that means. But the point is that I had to do this thing, and I did the following. I said to myself, how do I speak to the people, because the politicians wouldn't do it. The NEC wouldn't speak to the people in the Western Cape because they knew they'd have to lose 8,500 teachers. So they said, the NEC, of course, were happy if they speak. Well, you were asked, but I would ask, we kept the teachers, why are you losing the teachers? Because you voted for them. That's another story. But how to speak to people so they understand that what was happening here wasn't the ANC being difficult or hating colored people or anything like this. This was purely the consequence of apartheid and the resources available and how they must be equitably distributed. So this is how I explained it. 23 public meetings. Only time an SG has ever in this country called big public meetings because the politicians didn't want to go in there. All under the same. This is the story. A father has 10 children. One of the children looks just like him, blonde hair, blue eyes. The child says, Dad, I want a Nike. Sit there, Nike. There we go. You've got another child too. The child, you like the child, but not so much. The child, the head maybe like you, or maybe the eyes, and the skin, or whatever. And the child says, Dad, what about me? And he says, well, I can't give you Nike stuff. I spent just too much money on the Nike stuff. I can give you North stuff. So he created already the sensation. Mm-hmm. He's got 8 other kids who don't look like him at all. And they say, what about us? And he says, I've only got shirt flops for you. That's all I can afford. Now, that's a metaphor for how the money was divided educationally. Yeah? White, colored, black. The number's more or less the same. 1, 1, 8. Now, along comes a constitution that you can't do that anymore. He said, what am I saying? You take all you've got and you divide it by all the children. So what does he do? He's got 5 rand he spends on the white child, 2.5 rand he spends on the colored child, and 1 rand on each of the 8 black children. So he's got 15.5 rand. Divide it by 10, what's the outcome? 1.5. The ones were wanting to go to 5. How far did they go? To 1.5. Just put a flower on the flip-flop. That's all. The 2.5 walked the street screaming Amanda and whatnot and killing and dying or whatever, and they were expecting to go to 5. They go to 1.5. So the 2.5, the talent community, lose so much of what they had been given by the nation. They did not know what was being given to their brothers and sisters. So now they, what the hell? What did we struggle for? And the whites, of course, go from 5 to 1 to 5. But they moan too, but they've got other capitals. They've built up money, they've built up connections, they can make their way. But so the ones are the ones in the way, man. Only 1 point. That's the point, you see. That redistribution takes you there. I want you to grasp that. I want you to grasp that. Your conclusion can only be the future of this nation does not depend on these people, but on these. What they do and what they are would be South Africa. Makes sense. The Freedom Charter says that under black rule. It didn't say under black rule, I think, what it meant, the black rule. It says you are a majority and you will be ruling. So now when you are ruling, what must you have in your head in order to rule well? What must you do? What must you be? And that's the part of the debate post-1994 that hasn't happened. It didn't happen during struggle either, because we're all focused there. So we've got a big job. The big job is how to insert into the minds of the people of this country that we're in a tough position, that this government can't support all their needs, and they've got to work like hell. A piece of paper drops there in Bulet or in Maddenburg. Someone must pick it up. They can't say, when is government coming? Be in this thing. Be part of this thing. Now, this is the facing up that I'm asking you to ask our president to do. To speak to our people. Then they say, there will be no tracking of universities. How the hell, given that that's a thing created by us to create this high-level knowledge, I think I'm observing university technology now, and the kids are doing what they do. How can it be allowed in a country like this? This can't happen. If I were the president and it happened there, I'd get in my car, I'd go straight there and I'd say, guys, this is wrong. We've got to speak to our youth formation. We speak to them and say, you've got to have development at the top of your agenda. Whichever way you want to do it, don't expect that you can just simply by overthrowing. This won't work anymore. This won't work anymore. Where is it? Yeah, I know. But you can't. Yeah, but that's what leadership does. We're barreling into an abyss. And I'll show you that abyss, and I'm going to stop. There's the war game. That's the war. That's the instrument of our victory. If that instrument doesn't work, and we put skills for that instrument, if that instrument doesn't work, we're a goner as a nation. There's no possible way we're going to clean the water, make the alternative energy, deal with the new viruses. None of it will happen. So how do we get a nation behind us? Chinese have succeeded. Cubans have succeeded. The Russians have succeeded. What's wrong with us? Why can't we get our people to understand education is the heart of this nation's future? Who's going to tell them this? We're going to spell it out for them. I'm telling you to do this. Just to give you a sense of the trouble we need. This is going to have to fail. And look, that's how it starts. I'm going to show very quickly. That's how it starts. And it grows and it becomes smaller depending on the question you ask. If we were, in instance, say, excellent in soccer, then South America would grow very big. This would grow very big, Europe would grow very big, and South Africa would just disappear. Have you got that now? Maybe not after next week, after next month. Yeah? I'll give you my fingers. But as it stands now, as it stands. So, we ask about primary education. We see we've gone down. It seems like all of our kids are in primary education in Africa. Technically goes down further. Look at this. Look what's happened there. Now, do you wonder why these people are so powerful, economically and technologically? Why they can blow us up, put a bomb on this room yesterday, in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. That's the game they play. Science research. Look at that. That's blob at the bottom. That's South Africa. 60% of all research being done in this country at the moment is being done by white South Africans over the age of 50. 60% of all research being done in Africa being done by white South Africans in South Africa over the age of 50. Give them 15 years. Over the age of 50, an average of about 10 years. And then in 10 years' time, that blob disappears. And it becomes a straight line. How are we going to speak to our kids to say, guys, this is the country's life we're playing with here. This is a big story. This is bigger than AIDS. Because this has generational, you will succumb to every new thing that will come. SARS will come, bird flu will come, we'll fall apart on every one of them. We won't have the medicine, we won't have the doctors. And the doctors, I scolded the doctors the other day on this occupation specifically. I said, my God, you're happy with your victory. We've got dentists and things that you have a lot of them. I say, you're happy with your victory. They say, very satisfied. See, they want it done. There's a zero-sum game, my friend. And they can only have so much money. It passes it out in order to make sure it keeps everybody in the net. Now, you've just taken a big chunk for yourself, which means that there's probably going to be a million houses not built this year. Congratulations. It's the absence of sense-making, you see, that everyone thinks they can just extract and government must give. Why is this not happening? Why? Why? Who am I? How am I located in this business? Why have I become a spectator to my own life? Who's talking to us? How are the youth leagues being conditioned? They can fight for socialism, they can fight for communism, but fight in a dialectical way. Build the competences needed to one day have this Valhalla. They imagine it's just, boom, I stump on you, I beat you up, I declare a new thing, and there we are. We did it for 2005. We did it for 2005. Not a tragic thing imaginable. I cried, sitting in my chair, head of education, in 2000, in March, Itami Seleko succeeded in convincing the 7 ANC heads of education to vote for us to go on with 2005 into high school. Carded after, pause, there's a problem here. And they caucused and they all came and said, we're ready, we're ready. I have another 29 pages, 29 points on a page. I spoke to them, 29 points. And I'll secure the treason, undermining the government and all that stuff. And then, what then happened, as you know, is that it fell apart, as I said. So you see, it's when your motives are not focused.
Yeah.
What is the story for us? There are three things that we must do. Build a democracy. We must make sure we can survive and be viable, and hold our own, and we must deal with the ravages of the past. That's three things. And when somebody comes along with curriculum that's so bad, that's going to be so punishing, and you invest in it, and then later on you see it wrong because all the evidence was there, and you still go on, you want to go on, and you lie to government, and you say that it's okay, and they go on into the high school. They carry that bad curriculum into the high school. It was so, so perfect. I'm going to give you the last thing I'm going to show because I want you to understand it. Academic literacy. We decided as universities with the permission of government to have a national based content. You've seen this, haven't you? What you may not have seen is what I'm going to show you now. A national based content. 12,000 students participated. 12,000. But it was a skewed sample. Six of the universities there were Cape Town, Stellenbosch, Witwatersrand, KwaZulu-Natal, Rhodes, and Pretoria. Yeah? So these are all six historically white institutions, and the bulk of their students are white. There were only two historically black institutions here, Manga Sutu and UWC. I found out afterwards that the others didn't want to participate because they were scared of what the results would show. Okay? So see again, facing up. If the results show things are bad, it's hallelujah. Now you all know what we must do. But as long as you hide it, there is no problem. So, this is what they got. Three areas. Academic literacy, 12,000 people, and half of them were considered proficient, and half of them had a chance, and that lot had no chance at all, academic literacy. This lot here, depending on where they were, when they were down here, they probably had no chance. Up here, with a lot of work, they had a chance. So look at what happened. That's AWC. That's our part of that sample. We were historically black. Remember, those are all universities, the largest number of people who wrote that test were white people. This is what UWC students who were already admitted for those courses, how they tested. See this? Of the 280, only 59 were seen proficient. Science, 194, but the bulk of them were here. Law, 18 proficient in academic literacy. The bulk of these were here. Okay, now you've got that story in your head now. Now the next one. What happened now? According to our national benchmark, only a third of the students from all of those eight universities were capable of dealing with quantitative matters at university level. Look at that. Okay? What should I see? See this? 11. 11. 4. 4. Now this comes from the people below the line. Do you know the thing I showed you? The two South Africans? The big one, this one here. That one is mostly the people above the line. Those are all mostly white people. This is South Africa, the real South Africa, the 90% who must carry this country forward. This is what they're producing as readiness for university. Now you didn't see this because this is given to us. I'm not ashamed to put it there because I want our students to know, I want them to understand, I want them to know that the road back from there is a hard road. They've got to work like hell. They must work 10 times harder because of our history, because of the difficulties. When a woman called Janetta Cole, who was the principal of Spelman College in America, African-American, incredible academic, she came to visit. She spoke to our students. And she asked them, how much time do you spend studying every day? One student said 2 hours. So she said, that's very good. How many subjects do you do? They said 5.
Oh, yeah. 2 times 5.
10 hours a day, that's good. She said, no, only 2. Only 2. And she, this was her response. She said, my child, you can't do that. You see, it's the understanding that the leap from here to excellence is big. It's sweat, it's hard, it's unfair. There's nothing wrong with our brains. Our history has put us in this spot. But we can work our way. Remember the good news? We are cultural creatures. What we've made, we can undo.
Oh, yeah.
And with what, if every South African said tomorrow, when I wake up tomorrow, I'm in this game with government. We'll fight them on policy and social. But in it, as loyal South Africans, working together. I must say, it doesn't mean that you've all got to become one. But we're working for a common set of goals. And I see a contest with you about how you're behaving with your second and goals. If everyone decides tomorrow, we're going to go to school and we're going to work. If every parent, no matter how difficult it is in my community, I'm going to start, join the community organization and start working. The country changes within a day. Where will those messages come from? Last one, I'm just going to show you. Very last one. Math. Those of students accepted for science on the basis of the matric results. Accepted for science on the basis of the matric results. That is what we found when we tested our 280 science students with respect to their academic studies after matric. One. This is real. This is real stuff. But the kids are bright. They're lovely kids. I've never worked with such incredible young people. I've got confidence in them. But we've got to hold them on because they must have confidence in themselves that they can crack through there. But it's not through joining. It's not through matches. It's through bloody hard work every day. Saturdays and Sundays, all day. That's what it'll take. That's what it takes South Africa to work its way out of the history that was created for us. And you're the leaders. You're the message givers. You're the inspiration. I must give it up to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Professor. I think, members, what we've been given here, I think, is taking us, in a sense, a little bit away from that, just focusing on the operations and the meetings that we had, etc. It's, in a sense, a reality shock. And you'd recall some of the real hard questions that we asked in our own committee around what we've seen as presentations coming in and out, and, in a sense, at times, a sense of despair, as, for example, we are listening to presentations. And this brings into just focus in the broader context what's actually taking place. And obviously at the right at the end, the issue of the self, the issue of our own responsibility as in society, I think that comes to the fore and how you can make that change. What I will allow is for us to engage. If there's obviously a question, etc., that's fine, but engagement is quite relevant. And let me see if there's any hands on there. And then I think we are seeing this as an engagement and even because what we've heard is quite a self-critical thing. It's critical on all of us. It's critical on the institution, in fact, that the rector represents. It's the self critical that comes to the fore. So I'm noting a couple of hands, and let me start off is on my left hand side, Member Kuwait. Standing left, yeah.
Thank you. Okay. I think one is to appreciate the input by Prof. It's really an eye opening, and it pushes one to the level of really getting to think about the real issues and the challenges that we're facing. And mainly to say that I think majority of us are aware of the challenges that exist, and it's upon us to really start looking at what needs to happen. What are the building blocks? And I think even when we had engagement, Prof, when we came to the institution, was to say, as the committee, or as the people in the committee, or members in the committee, we realize the task that we have upon ourselves, and therefore it's huge. And sort of looking at ways of improving and making sure that we do not fail in our own respective way. And acknowledging some of the issues that you raise, for example, I mean, when you look at the past in terms of institutions, education institutions, whether from primary to tertiary, as a source of mobilizing against the apartheid system. Because that was mainly the reason, and hence that culture of learning sort of a bit died, because the schools were used, I mean, from where some of us come from, schools were a source of where you could be able to mobilize, you could be able to interact and recruit for a particular ideology and for a particular cause. And therefore, coming out of that environment is how you turn the situation around and be able to create a sense of that appeal to gaining more knowledge and gaining more understanding. But I think the other issues around the challenge of creating more new knowledge and an environment of teaching. I'm a bit concerned around the issue of, you know, your level of masters, your level of the output of where you are able to really get a number of people who are there. I mean, various examples would come in both parties, maybe from the society and institutions playing a certain role of trying. Again, there's that sense of those who are in the environment protecting it to ensure that it's not lost to them. I mean, I'm just reflecting on the issue that 60% of the people who produce the research are male white dominated, you know. But again, you have that sense that even that entry is not, you know, it's not there. I mean, you look at the dropout rate of master's students. It's not that we don't have the enrollment. We do have the enrollment. But what happens in that process?
No, we don't have the enrollment. We don't have the enrollment because we're not, up till very recently, we haven't been funding honors.
And masters as well.
The NRS would fund masters. Mm. It would fund doctorates, but also limited. But not honors. Now, this is what happens. A bright young student gets to matric to a good degree.
Mm.
And now you ask the student to stay on. There's no money in the system for that student. They're now working. NRF are working now on closing that gap. And so you see, it's how these things all knit together. If you have a set of goals, say for instance, the NRF said they want 6,000, they want to produce 6,000 PhDs per year. Now to produce 6,000 PhDs, you must have at least, say, 1,000, 2,000 highly qualified advisors for those 6,000. You know? And we don't have them. There's no doubt about this, that we can't hold a very, very talented black student because there's so much else. BE stuff and all that, off they go. They can make millions of runs without having to do any of that. It happens when there are so many coming through that the options are what they will with us. We could only choose A, B, C, D, and E, but we have the choices. Go. Now they've got the world to choose from. So now you've got to prepare far more of them coming out of high school with good, because they've got so many different options. So you have enough coming into the university and enough wanting to stay there. Universities don't pay much, but it's a wonderful life. But the point is, it's the change of consciousness, you see. We think of education as a product, and we think of it as input. I use the word input and output again. Education is not like that. This is input. You get the stuff you need, you get the machine to do it, somebody works it, an outcome. Education is reciprocity. It's my engagement with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be the best teacher in the world. If you're not switched on to the engagement, nothing happens. Or if you think that the engagement only requires of you that you spend 2 hours a day to study, because you think that's possible. It's a consciousness change. It's not a technical matter. This is, and that's why I keep asking. I've asked every parliament that I've been saying, please ask the president to do this, to give us the power to engage differently with our young people. So when the kid gets up in the class and says to the teacher, fuck you, there is a way now to speak to that. The president says this will not happen here. And so now it's the parents that have got to come. They've got to listen and answer here. Now, except the teachers, come father, the kids say, I'm careful, come, getting out of your class in any case, take the walk. And then the next thing, the school wants to expel the child, and the problem for a day, they take the child back. So the child comes back as a hero, walks back into that class, having done all of that. There's a problem at the very heart of how we understand these relationships. And it can only change when the very top, the big bosses, say to our people, that will not do yet. And there will be a price to pay if you do this yet. You trash our university, you go to jail. Must say that. Otherwise, we'll go on destroying. We build these things and destroy them. What are the processes by which you change people's ways of thinking and being? The best process is where you can convince them. But there are always scary ways in any organization.
Goodbye.
But another thing, just coming to what you just said, is the issue of even the academics being part of the society in a role. Because one of the challenges that we have is to say, have academics sitting in little corners, doing their own things, not being part of finding the solutions that are never good. That, I think, as well, is creating that.
It's clear that we're gonna have further engagement. But let's just hear the other so and then let's just get at the end a reflection from Professor O'Connell. Did I see your hand, Member Bonamo? I think what we are experiencing this is an engagement process.
Yeah.
Because it's a loaded input that requires serious engagement. And I think what we are doing is, we just started it.
So why didn't you have them take this to their holidays?
Yeah.
Evening sometimes.
We're going to have to, for example, so I think that's very clear. So it's not necessarily we're going to engage in everything today, because what it is, it's a change approach that we are talking about. And how do we actually get society to understand itself, the self-critical issues and the role of society itself? Member Bonamo?
Thank you, Chairperson. Professor, you have actually touched deep into my heart. If you look at this whole scheme of things and look at the origin of knowledge which actually occurred in our own continent and where we are currently, it shows Africans have actually done what you can call self-destruction. We have destroyed ourselves. We should be far by now. We should be far by now. Had we kept on. And I want to just summarily say, what you have said to us has actually changed, I would say, my mindset, and I want to believe that this has actually happened to my fellow committee members here. And it's so important that I feel perhaps the committee, through the chairperson, should actually talk to the Speaker of Parliament, and there should be an arrangement so that you come and address the entire parliament, so that this is not only rest with us here, but all the leadership of this country, it must sink into them so that they can then proliferate it to the grassroots there. This is what I wanted to say. Thanks.
I'm just going to go down the, if there's any, anyone, Member Lekhetsa? And thanks, Mem Lechetcho is also speaking, I think, today in the debate, and he's actually requested to leave a little bit earlier to prepare, but he was still here. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I was listening to you, Prof, on the issue of language, on Good News. You see, language like other cultures. When I was talking to one other colleague of mine, a white guy, saying to deal with the issue of destitution, poverty, you will need to adopt those destitutes. Then he said to me, that is not in their culture. Yes. And to deal with the issue of poverty. This is not our culture. Other cultures can be divisive and primitive. And we cannot at this juncture continue to sing songs on that. I want to argue that our constitution says we are envisaging an racial, a democratic, a prosperous country. And that should supersede our narrow culture in bringing unity, cohesion amongst our people. The issue of language also instills fear in me, because we need at some stage to discuss this thing of a language. Because, as you are saying, it has nothing to do with ideology, and it's not math and science. We are always talking about culture, but there are those cultures that are very, very divisive. The last issue that I want to talk to is the issue of population explosion. This is serious, the way you have just indicated. And I think we need to do something about that, and urgently. What is that? I had argued before that instead of having 3 kids myself, I would rather adopt.
Okay, let's move. And then just in terms of our time, I'm just going to ask, and I think we've already agreed we must have further engagement. And members, I'm very sorry for the just knowing, for example, the cut-off of the parliamentary program as well. Shwana, member Shwana.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I try to be very short. And I have 4 very short questions. Professor. No, actually, it's not the debate.
Yeah, that's the question.
Because I didn't remember when you talk about this. I remember where I saw you signing the statute thing. We'll talk after this.
Yeah.
But
she was also an educator.
Yeah. Professor, we were sitting with a very big challenge. I want to thank you for talking to us. Because already I can see that you finally maybe got home to us. Because it's very difficult. We are sitting with a situation in South Africa. What we have done is to maybe help us to acknowledge 4 things that I want to say. The South African influx, like people coming in and out. Isn't it we can't deal with South Africa alone? We must to deal with Southern Africa. I remember a SATO conference, SATO without D, Southern African Teachers Organization, organizations meeting in Namibia some years. We are trying to deal with it. But I think this engagement must continue. And the second thing is, for sure, people come in and out because this has a bigger economic development. And that brings a lot of challenges to this country. The question maybe to help you is what to do with it. Maybe this is not the right place to deal with it, but we need to deal with it, I want to believe. And this thing of colonization in Cape Town, nobody has ever said the truth like you did today. You see, yeah, in other places it will not happen like that. Because it's like, how do you deal with a place where people have dual citizenship and they come and vote and take over? We'll deal with it until somewhere else. And finally, we need to teach our children your rights. We need to, this history must go on. Because if we don't, your own child will sit next door and fight you with the enemy, I suppose.
Yeah, Wendy?
Thanks, Chairperson. I think a lot has been said, Prof, and I think you really brought us back to that somewhere. I'm just going to ask one question, and that is with proficiency. We've got kids in institutions now. We can't wait for some time to address the problem. How do you see us dealing with kids out there now? I say this especially, I've got one son that is matriculated in the OBE, one of the first, and the other one is older. And you can see the difference between them. Amongst your own kids, you can see. So how do you see us dealing with this? And I think this dialogue now has to open up. I really think that we need to start talking about it. Thank you.
The community must mobilize, they must get all of the kids in the schools, the high schools that are close by, who are prospective, identified as prospective universities, you know how people want to. And they must have faculty classes. There's no other way. The community must now take those kids, nurture them, work them through, make sure they get into university, and they can create bursaries, but small bursaries, just to pay the entrance fees. The kids will almost always be poor, so they get in a class. So getting them in, but nurturing them before that. We used to do that stuff, eh?
We have that community stuff.
We're in struggle. We were great in struggle, man. Then we've lost it. We've got to get back to understanding the role of the community and looking after its own kids and taking it to the next. So you start in your area now, so speak to the principals and say, can we speak about established schools, and we get people from outside, from universities, they will help communities, and see what can be going there. Any kind of child that they believe already now is prospective of the university.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I should reserve my comment and question for the next round where we'll have engagement, because Prof, I just want to go to serious questions, deeper questions, you know, the ideological questions, the reformation, you know, vis-a-vis. Yes, transformation and reform vis-a-vis, really, because, you know, I think we are caught now in dichotomy, and we have to really separate, because I think the nature of South Africans, in particular, the black people, we were... Our cultural attitude, we were brought up in such a way that you build, you don't destroy. But at the very same time, in the same society, you have this factor that you gain. It doesn't matter how you gain.
Take what you can, right?
Yes, and then you move away. And for me, I see there's a lot of contradictions. You know, I think we can have that day so that we can unpack, you know, the...
Well, humans live easily with paradox. We can be one thing and the other. Quite easy.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on social cohesion. I think, Prof, even when you talk of this social cohesion, we still need to have a lot of discussions around that, as to say, how do we build it? When do we say, yes, we are working towards the social cohesion? But I might come with one example, of which is very vague to me, as to say, when we organize things like in a country, like let me take for an example the games that are coming, the FIFA World Cup. In a way, it's as if, yes, we are getting there, trying to come up with social cohesion and everybody's, but I was really doing it to refer back to culture, the things that we do. On the, where are we? How are we doing these things? I think it can be a debate, a realist to say, and even the role that education can play on that. Starting from the primary level, what is it that we do that we build towards that? And again, I know we won't talk about that now, but you have talked a lot on e-language as such. We are talking of 11 language, official languages in South Africa. We are talking of education. How do we match these things? Where are we? We are talking. Yes, sir. Yeah, that is why I said, Chairperson, I know we don't have time, but I feel these are the things that we need to sit down and talk about them. We need to face up, exactly. Because really, if we leave it like this, we go around boasting we've got these 11 official languages. Where are we? Where are we putting, you see? So I think that's one of the debates, Jefferson, that I will very much wish we get time one day, we sit down and see, we debate what is the best we can do about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Member McMillan. I thought I won't speak. And Prof, let me thank you for having broadened our horizons. The challenge is so huge. It ultimately needs everybody and leadership to take decisive steps, because I don't think it's one of the inputs just which just get given and you sit on them, you know. It's an input that needs engagement and ultimately some action taken so that we move from where we are. There's really a paradigm shift from how we're engaging issues. Yes, we do need some leadership. And we need to expose almost every perhaps sector to ensure that we embrace some of these issues. There will be other intellectuals who can as well engage and here and there find some common ground. But there's no, to me, it's not a matter of option. It's something that just has to be done. Yes, it has to be done. Unless we do it, we are doomed as a country. Now, it starts from us as individuals, Chair. What do I do even as an individual, home, my own kids, and hope to spread that to even other people ultimately moving forward? So let me just reserve quite a lot of engagement for that day, if it will ever come, but it must come. It must come.
The last person, Member Kuzan.
Thank you. I'm just saying that, Professor, the I take your point about the best, the first, the second, the third. I also take the issues around tuberculosis, malaria, HIV, and so on. So to the extent that they are actually physical, as in they happened, but they are also metaphorical. Because I think that we are in that space where we would have had TB, and then, and in fact, you could actually argue along the lines of knowledge and those things as metaphoric. I think that's where we are, because we are witnessing the kind of death as in HIV in relation to the knowledge. However, using knowledge for me is again a point of agitation, because I do not know whose knowledge you are talking about. Yes, I think that I do not also understand what that definition is, whether knowledge would equal to self-sufficiency and also anticipating the future. And then that becomes, I do not know what that means. Because you are arguing also for a new consciousness, which in my mind you are saying is the coming together of two dialectic or opposing views into a new consciousness. But I also do not see in the same breath and in the same presentation what is it that we preserved from the Bantu education of which I'm a product. And what is it that we preserved from apartheid, which had good practices within a bad policy framework. So in other words, I think that there is a sense in me that we clinically walked away from the dark into the light without preserving and carrying through that which we could use.
I do not know, because I think that I was in Hilltown, I was in at Forte, and all of those things, those were dynamic sites of curiosity, exploration, and everything else. And I think that to the same extent, we carry that bit of it, but where did we lose it? So I think in the next round, when we speak, this is what we... But also, I'm curious about the thing is, what are we busy with in not producing that knowledge? What is your diagnosis? Because you know, but isn't that there is also a fear of expressing or diagnosing correctly what it is that holds us back from knowledge? But again, what is that knowledge? Because if you go to Durban and you see that barrier thing where there are lots of traditional medicines, that's a pharmaceutical industry. What knowledge is that? And how are we going to get that knowledge and import it into the Western world if that is the knowledge that we should be known for? So again, I think that the dark eras and so on, I think that also we shouldn't suffer from a lower sense of esteem as a continent, because we do have knowledge, and knowledge does not die. Because the channel of distribution for our knowledge was the oral history and so on, and it's not dead. I went to ICAD in France to learn about Chaga, and I took exception, because I thought Chaga was mine and not French. Now, I'm just saying with regards to French and knowledge things and the way that we can, to the extent that I couldn't write about it, I had to go and learn about him somewhere. So, but I will leave it there, but what are we busy with?
Okay, just one or two comments on this. The challenge, of course, is of the urbanization aspect of that. And as a consequence of the urbanization, a lot of what was good intuition came to life. The things that that gave stability to the those things are more external. As a consequence of that, we haven't found anything I can do to take it, to give it so that the best of the old is open to engaging with the best of the new. So let's have a quick talk about it. I gave you another paper.
Emma, did you receive this one?
No.
Okay.
This comes from Dennis Meadows, and I drew this conclusion. The first is the lie. And this is the lie. The lie that all governments tell their people. All governments. The lie is that population and resources can go on matching each other forever. You can go on and on and on and on increasing your population, and the resources to deal with it will be available. Energy will be available, coal will be available, petrol will be available, and that's a lie. The second is the hope. The hope is that somehow, somewhere in our head, something switches on, and we realize that you can't go on growing the population forever. You can never catch up with them, you're always in trouble. That we stop the population growth, and we, before we go across the threshold where we now breach sustainability. Sustainability is no longer possible, we've gone above that, we've taken so much out of it that it's gone. Before we get there, we're going to turn, and we're going to now start seeing different people. We're not going to have those big cars, we're going to put off the lights, you know all those things? And so we then run just under that, curb from population growth, we nurture it, we recycle, and we do all those things. And so we run, and so we can sustain human life forever because we don't run it over the sustainable. That's the hope. The third is the reality. We already have breached it. We've already gone over the threshold, the ecological threshold. The world is groaning. The forests that give us the oxygen are already being destroyed. So what is likely to happen, if we don't do something dramatic here, is that we are going to go straight up and over, we're already over, and then we start crashing, and then it's anarchy. Then it's the dark ages in Europe, where people just smash into each other, and you take what you can get. You want something to eat, you take it. And we lose all our sense of humanity. Now that's Meadows' three ways of understanding this. Politicians tell the people, growth will get us there. Huh? Growth will get us there. And where growth, and according to population too. Take some bad examples of that. The gentleman there is dead right. My daughter has told us that she's not going to have children. There are enough children in the world, she's going to have. Then, and the church must have been on the piece of the game of condoms, capture. And so the hope is the one that we must be working for, that we will start making sense of things, that we will understand when we are now going too far, and there's no way back. Look, how do we claw this back? How do we claw our kids back into the new town consciousness of what schools are? How do we claw them back? Eh? We used to get beaten, eh? Beaten. I'm not advocating that. I think this Western thing of not even saying bad things to each other, that's a problem for me. Because it's not like that in nature. If a little lion cub goes the wrong way, the mother gives him one slap on the rump and he comes back, you know? We've decided we will not be like that. So what are the levers? What lever has a teacher today got in a classroom and confronted with 40 students? What's the lever? None. There is no leader except that teacher's energy and the teacher's ability to hold that class and have that class be with him or her. To be with him or her. How likely is that to happen? How many teachers are able to do that? So what happens in most classes is the teacher spends half the time simply trying to restore order. In the knowledge that we have got no leader levers with which to restore the order. That the kids have got all the power. So the only thing that we now can do, given the path we've chosen, is for the kids to be in the game. And the community must put the kid in the game. What we did very badly, partly destroyed our community, and from 1994 we did not consciously set about supporting the community organizations to grow the mechanism for the next phase of our transformation. In the actual fact, we did the opposite. Right? Community organizations all disbanded, and instead we now have you. We now have you. We've got counselors. They must do it. It can't happen except in the house with the neighbor next door where the two of you start being good. And there's a lot of that still alive in the community. A lot of that still alive. And that's a great thing we must carry forward. But that's not enough to help us with alternative energy, with alternatives to the how to deal with HIV and AIDS.
Thanks a lot, Brian. The members, I think we've reflected. What I am picking up is members suggesting we must have a further engagement, but most probably this will be one where, because the bottom lines are we actually trying to find easy answers in society for very complex issues? I think that's a real question. So what is the underbelly of what's taking place in our society and beyond the South African society? I think that's the type of things for debate. The question about a conscious and how do we actually take forward that discussion, the debate, but make sure that we generate engagement beyond this room. I think that's really what we are saying to ourselves. Is it at some point bringing in the leadership of all the strategic youth formations in society, the leadership of all institutions of young people at higher education and school institutions? Those are the things that we will obviously have to think through a little bit. Because the way one reads it, it's not one of little bit here and little bit there. You know, there's this thing that we... 15 years ago, I was one that spoke about the starfish, and you can, you know, if you can actually just help this one, then it's got a rippling effect. The problem is too big currently in our space, and the contradictions. Whatever is happening somewhere else impacts on what happens here. And it, meaning the global kind of phenomena, and how we, for example, able to manage that and play in that space. Not at the economic level, but even at the deep societal level. One of the intelligence people told me one day that whatever you see in Cape Town, what you think there's a world out there, and this is not even a 90-10% issue here, but whatever you see, there's another world in Cape Town, and that's the negative society at play. And it's actually very horrific. It speaks to the taxi queens, it speaks to the drugs, etc., but it says it's actually a very well-organized society, very, very instrumental, very well-organized, and that competes against what's taking place in all the rooms here, in the council, and in the churches, and in the CBOs. There is that other world fighting it out. And I'm giving an example of Cape Town because somebody actually told me that as a very real, and then they unpack then what's happening, whilst we're thinking this is the world and is a bit of negative activity and gangsterism activity and drugs, etc., is a deep, profound engagement taking place. And it's obviously linked beyond South Africa. So that's the reality of engagement.
I also see an opportunity of us engaging with the CETA and the education department, education and training department, is how do we actually create a training manual somehow around some of these things, around what is a consciousness, how do we actually build a new consciousness, how do we build community organization, how do we make sure that the community becomes the center and the responsibility of the self in all of that. So possibly can give rise even to a leadership program that can be beyond party political lines and can go into society in a very big way, and obviously supported from the top by government, by the president and others. But thanks, Professor O'Connell. We've also heard you saying about the decision taking a few years ago, if it's not well thought through. And we are now faced with, I'm saying, and I said it at Mercita conference, everyone speaks today about the skills revolution, but what do you actually mean by just that statement? Because I'm hearing big business, I'm hearing small, I'm hearing workers, I'm hearing everyone speaking about we must have a skills revolution, and the slang is right. But what is it? What is it actually, what are we actually talking about? And those are some of the issues. The intention about OBAE many years ago, I think you said it the day when myself and the whip and another member were just engaging you, you indicated that. The intention of OBAE, brilliant. However, there's a country somewhere in the world, that I don't know if it was Canada that you referred to, was it Canada, that actually planned the OBE approach 7 years before they implemented it. Kentucky. They planned it 7 years before they implemented it. We've taken the decision and then we implemented it without pre-planning processes and then some of the subsequent consciousness conditions we saw on the slide. So thanks, Professor, and enjoy 2010, and we will take forward this engagement, and we will call you back for further.
One, that it doesn't matter with teachers only. Education isn't that student. It's not an input output student, it's a relationship. The student is not in the game, there is no game. No matter what you give a teacher, no matter what resources, no matter what equipment, the student is not in the game. Second, that we expected that struggle that produced for us this new consciousness. It didn't. And so we, not as a nation, actually thought about how do we create a sense of nation. What are the processes that we need to do that? And so that's another.
Thanks. And those that were fortunate to read the weekend papers, but also that were present in a discussion that we've listened to by our president, which I see now, was over the weekend also articulated. Just the notion about the way we, for example, engage in society. The president actually last week extensively spoke in one or two or three meetings around just that issue. So I think that debate is there, and we'll possibly have to take that forward. Members, let's now move straight to our last item, second last item. Thanks a lot, Professor. And that would be the adoption of minutes and reports. You received it last week, if members can remember. Okay, but this year in front. But members, it's essentially just the 5th of May draft minutes, and it's related to the NSF. And we actually met in this room, where we just articulated some of the resolutions and steps to be taken around intervention. You would remember we talked about we need to get legal advice just around the landscape process. We talked about RPL. We talked about the critical skills issues to be addressed. That's the one, and then there's a draft report to the University of Zululand. So those were the as well as the Free State, I think. Those were the minutes that we just had to adopt. Members, I've looked at it.
just on the first one, the 5th of May, is there anyone that wanted to Yeah, 5th of May, yeah. Can we get a proposal? Remember, Kubayu weren't here, so... that's the first one. Do you have it? Or, okay. Yeah, it's just two pages. Because remember, it was an internal discussion. We said we're not bringing in anyone, we're just debating and engaging a little bit. And members, I've received today, it's just a kind of from the person that we've engaged from Parliament, from just the legal services side, just to understand the role of committees, Parliament vis-a-vis, for example, a new landscape process. So I've only received it today, so it's there now, and I'll obviously have to look into it and call the two members. So that process has happened. It's more a question of we only received it today, so I will give copies to those two individuals that we've agreed upon. But let's first look at the adoption of this minute. Yeah. What word do you want to put? Okay. Agree to something. Okay, there's just a bit of sensitivities in terms of, I think she's a bit confused when she's something. she's in court today. Remember, because she's in court today, so she's extremely oversensitive. That's not the oversensitivity, but I understand that oversensitivity.
Perhaps we may at some point as a committee need to know the content of what we're referring to. So next time we don't say the resolution, somebody saying it's not. I'm saying if there's need for us to understand what the resolution is, we may need to do that. We'll resolve now so that the minutes should be adopted. And later we may come to say it is not a resolution. You know that. So it's an important thing if we're in higher education and we're still arguing about terminologies and so on and so forth, when the content and the spirit may be one, then we may need to be sure what we're referring to. For now, those are the things that were agreed upon, whether it were recommendations or whatever, or proposals. But to me,
we've resolved to do everything.
And if
that is resolution, then...
Whatever then. But for now, I wanted to actually say that let's adopt the minutes. If other members don't have that and they think at some point there's a critical thing that warrant to
the
issue that we can do that. But for now, I think...
Can we then agree with that, members? That's one. Secondly, the draft report to the committee insofar as it relates to the oversight visit into the north. I've also asked the secretary, which I've also received yesterday, just to, after today, give copies. You'd remember that when we met in Pretoria at the department, we in fact requested then, as we visited the institution of the department, the building, there was a concern about the building and the lease agreements and all of that. And we've asked for that information. It has come, and that will also just be forwarded to all members. So they are saying they're busy reviewing that whole process, but they gave the history to that. Hey, Miss, the document is quite a thick one. If you did not go through it, obviously the last part of it speaks to the actual draft for discussion currently and for input. And members, you remember, I think it was Services Heater, was it last week, that made the point of the framework for the National Skills Development Strategy, that where they indicated about the disabled sector that it's very silent in the context of targets. So those are very, very serious pointers, I thought, and we should ensure that, not necessarily for the committee today, but where we do have constituencies, where we do engage those sectors, please ask them to actually go through this NSDS Draft 3, because there is a time frame, and that time frame is going to happen whilst we are actually on recess, and I'm a bit concerned about that process. It's like having something for debate for December when people are literally not around and going to engage on it. So we're asking members to send out that message, especially around the disabled sector, to their constituents. And whoever sits on that committee, the committee for the ministry dealing with that particular sector, please communicate the concerns around NSDS Draft 3 and that they actually must make inputs and reflect on this. I will also obviously now formally engage individuals in that committee. But can we, I wasn't on that first day there, however I subsequently joined in Pretoria, but can we, are members comfortable that we can now live with it? If people didn't read it, then we can just be honest and just say let's live with it and reflect on that, and if there's any radical concerns of it, especially on day one, because I've looked at the second day, that you can just forward it to Anele, but that we actually adopt those minutes. Members? Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, that's what I'm saying. Let's just indicate, because last week I realized that when the minutes were handed out, I knew this is going to happen. So that's what I'm saying. I understand, because people then took it. We didn't deal with if you can remember, the adoption. No, it was circulated. You're talking about the of last week? Yeah. No, I'm saying, members, I'm saying the report was circulated last week. I don't question my own thinking on that. I know it was circulated. Because as it was circulated, I was thinking about the fact that obviously it's a week now from today, possibly members, because you all get different documents everywhere. So that's the only thing. So I can't say without questioning. Fine. But the bottom line is, members, all that I can say, I realized at that time when it was distributed in the morning, I realized it is going to be possible this coming. So it is, it's possible. Let's accept that. But can we say that we accept this minutes of the Zululand University visit? If there is ever something that you feel radically there was a concern around, then you will communicate that to Anele. You will speak to me and we'll change those ones and present that back. Is that comfortable?
Yes.
Good, okay. I think the very last thing, members. Okay, the 12th of May, the very, very last one then. Can we? Okay. Okay, member Kubai, advice. Can we agree then? Good. Is that it? Yeah. Yeah, okay. The NSF. Okay. Okay, you... members, the draft report... NSF, NSA, and then the resolutions. And let me just read it, page 4. The NSF needs to step up its performance and set clear targets for key outputs. The appointment of the CEO has to be fast-tracked. The entire system of the NSF needs urgent review so as to address the challenges of underspending. So we've actually identified what it was. Remember, we were not happy with the fact that they're saying that they'll be able to spend. We then said, show us the implementation mechanisms towards that. The committee has to review legislation that governs both NSF and NSA so as to allow more accountability and performance. Was that part of our discussion? Yeah. There is a need for firm relationships between provinces and the NSF in terms of its allocation of funds to projects. And members, you'd remember an example, was it with higher education, health and welfare sector. I think there's some sector like that. Remember the slide when we've asked them the breakdown per province? Then you actually saw the spend on, was it ABET, adult education, on Cape Town, KZ, and Gauteng. And the reality is if you actually look at the skills deficit in South Africa, especially at the level of basic or adult education and ABET, it's in poorer provinces. So there's an anomaly. We spend that money in provinces that possibly deserve it, but definitely not at the level that the poorer provinces deserve it. So that's why that last point we've also identified. Members, are you comfortable with those? Mm-hmm. Yeah? No problem. What do you want to suggest? Yeah.
I think the argument, remember when we were talking about this, the issue around legislation was specifically on the, because it's legislation that allows them to have surplus funding, for example.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You were saying that there is a need for us to review legislation as legislatures.
Yeah.
Because some of the things that we are complaining about, it's what is on legislation that gives them a leeway to do those things. I'm just remembering one example of the surplus funding.
So for example, not send it back to treasury.
We don't send it because it's legislation that allows them to roll over the money. Hence, we came up with the issue to say there's a need to review legislation that governs NSA and NSF.
And it was in the context of accountability and performance. That debate I remember.
Chair, I agree with the principal. I'm just talking grammar because when we say we have to review, then we must by this time to have that. We did explore the possibility. All I need to understand is whether we agree that would, is what we will do.
That's
because
what we are saying.
If we are saying, then we must review that.
That's what we are trying
to say. Yeah.
We are saying that. Members?
No.
Okay, so thank you.
I'm saying, can we obtain that agreement today because I do not agree that we agreed. I'm saying we did speak about a review of a legislation, but now I am saying, are we then in agreement that that is what we must do and that is what we will do?
Okay, let me hear Member Gina. Just on that point.
Yeah, I think the whole argument is to say, are we in a position to review that as a committee? Are we not agreeing as to say we need to recommend or push for the reviewal of the legislation? Because I don't think as a committee we can sit down and say, yes, the legislation, we are reviewing it as a committee. I think the whole argument is around that.
Are we saying as legislatures we can't review legislation?
Okay.
That's what we're saying.
So we can sit down and do that. If it is so, then it is correct.
And I'm looking now, especially, I know the answer, but I can be wrong, so I'm looking at the most seasoned members in Parliament, right opposite me. Member Magazi?
You can recommend. We can recommend and review the legislation.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But there are parliamentary processes.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, seasoned insight. I want to say we can do that because you see they were coming with it to us as a proposal, and we were arguing that they cannot come with something to protect them for understanding. It's something new that they were bringing to us. As we said, this needs to be reviewed, and definitely we can do it.
Okay. Thank
you. The argument here is not about whether we can do it or not. The issue is a resolution or a discussion and an argument that we have taken that needs to be reflected on the minutes. And I'm saying part of the discussion we have agreed as the committee. Maybe we must get a record of that discussion to say what we have agreed upon
is
to review the legislation. How we do about it, whether we can do or what, is another issue.
Yeah.
But that's a resolution of the committee. That's what I'm saying. The minutes reflect correctly in that. That's the issue.
Okay, the last person on this.
I think the argument, if I'm right, is not that we have not resolved like that. I think the issue is more competence. Who can do it? Is it the committee or not? So I think we all agree it can't be the committee sitting here. It can't be on our own. I think that's where the argument is. Not that we haven't resolved. So the competence will be with Parliament, ultimately.
Can I understand this issue? Because
Let me conclude, first. I thought when people all of a sudden there's an outcry, I'm wrong. But I thought, you know, what I'm thinking, Chair, is that, let me try and conclude.
Sorry, members.
So that when you come in, you have understood what I'm trying to say. I'm saying, if we say we need to review ourselves, it's as if we can come in here, Chair, under you, being led by you, review and conclude on our own. You know? Now, the argument is to say, no, it's something that the committee can facilitate and ensure that it ends up happening, but not in the room where we are on our own as a portfolio committee. I thought that is what
but is... Members, are we speaking semantics here? We all know that this committee is a... Now, the committee is under an institution. That institution can decide tomorrow. It's not anymore these individuals in this committee, or it is not, for example, we call it something else, but it still functions as that committee.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning we don't have actually powers that way we can decide, and then it becomes a law. I thought all of us know this. But the review process can lead to a document from here, from the Secretary to Parliament, and Parliament then can take a decision on that. So that is, there is a technical process on that. Remember even the visit to Guyana, if you can recall that visit. That visit, there were certain decisions taken. We didn't take those decisions and send it to the department. We've taken those decisions, the recommendations, and we've gone through Parliament, and the Speaker of this House has written to the department saying these are the issues that the committee, this committee, are feeling needs to be instituted in the context of. So that's, I'm just saying there is a process. So I just assume when we speak, the committee to review, all of us know if we decide. After that, we decide, for example, we ask President to have a strategic oversight. All of us know that there is no power in the committee to actually then execute that and write the letter and say from hence on it will be done in that way. It will go through the parliamentary process. What unless I'm wrong in that process.
So let me just assist on that.
I'm seeing that.
You are not wrong, you are correct. As well, the committee can take on a legislation. We can sit as a committee and say we need to review this legislation, and therefore we call for public hearing. Out of that, you receive input. That's the process. The committee can initiate a policy review, and out of those recommendations, after calling public hearings and all that, that report is sent to Parliament for Parliament to amend that legislation. That is the process. It can be. It is initiated by the committee. Policy can be initiated twice. Through the committee or through the department in terms of changes. So that's how. That's why I was saying that we can do it. Because it's initiated here, we call to say, okay, NSA legislation, NSF needs to be be reviewed, what is the process? We start with looking at that, maybe get technical inputs. Out of that, we call for public hearings. Out of calling for public hearings, we make a submission to Parliament and Parliament passes
the last person on that, and then I'm going to give a ruling.
Well, number one, I was not in the meeting, but I think we are discussing a wrong thing. At the moment, we are looking at correcting or adopting minutes. There is a dispute on whether the committee only discussed or resolved. Either the committee let's assume that a decision was taken, yes, we'll review. It has nothing to do with competence. It means a decision was taken, maybe it was a bad decision,
but it's still a decision.
That was the decision taken. Mm. I think that's where it should go. This thing was whether, it could have been a non-tribunal decision, but if it was taken, yes, it was taken, the minister had full reflection. If it was not taken, it was not taken. I think we should restrict ourselves to that point.
Minister, I'm going to now suggest that what we'll do is, it's really just a bad day for silence. That's it. I normally look at him for wisdom, but today is just a very bad day for silence.
No,
because he's normally giving strategic perspective, and I thought he's going to help us in this one. So what we are saying is, I think the whip, as yourself member indicated, if the decision was that we need to review the legislative process when it comes to NSFAS, that is a decision that we've taken, right? So we park that. Then the next process is the how, right? And that is now not in for this minute. So can we then accept that we actually took, we did resolve on, we're going to review that in the context of the discussion. Can we conclude that?
There's no agreement.
Fine. So then we've agreed on that. All of that, I think it's an important thing that I'm picking up here, is possibly request to the Secretary that just in the context of this discussion, this is nothing to do with the decision now to adopt this minutes, right? In our next term, let us in fact have, based on this point, let's get the Secretary and parliamentary support that normally deals with this just to present to us what is those normal processes, so that we're all on the same page, because I think it was an important issue to that reflected. So we are going to get the legal support just on how that technical process is run in terms of that. I'm not asking Dennis now to answer, possibly he's got the answer right there, but we'll do that in the next session. Dennis, can we then adopt this now?
Yes.
Thanks. The last issue, yeah, silence.
What you're proposing may not do any harm.
Okay.
But at the same time, I don't think, in my view,
yeah,
there was need to explain processes of how
mm-hmm.
things can be done. I thought all of us here on that we can be agreed as well. We may just be doing another additional thing, but I don't think that's where the argument was.
Okay.
So, but I want to leave with your ruling. We've adopted minutes and so on, but I'm saying there's no need to even say, when you review, this is what happened. That will do based on the resolution. That process, I think you will understand it.
But Member Makubela, I thought it is an important point, because it can be, meaning, I'm not so sure what the answer also is, because it is going to help us. So remember, if we are going to go into a review process, for example, calling a public hearing, etc., we need to know what can we, so it's a nice context, it's not a question of what is right and what is wrong. It is more so that we actually do the right thing and follow the right process. It's more in that line that I'm suggesting it. Yeah, there is a standard presentation relating to that, and I was just thinking that we actually must get it, because it's a very strategic question, in fact, that Member Bukuza raised, that brought about the discussion. Because how far can we go and how far can't we go, and where does it being commissioned from, and where does it not being commissioned from? And if we've decided here,
is that a decision or is it a recommendation to Parliament before Parliament? You know, it's all those things that we just need to kind of agree upon. And there is a standard process around that. And I thought, let's just bring that to the committee. Because if we are to now institute the action on that one, we will have to follow the right processes. That's really the issue. Members, there is a draft program that I also was not able to, I think you only received it today. Yes, sir. So we were not able to look at it, but there is a meeting tomorrow of the chair, of chairs, and all the chairpersons. So I would ask us to understand, you've noted that we've requested certain visits to the northern part of South Africa, including outside of the borders of South Africa, that was turned down. But you also noted that we've underspent our own budget, by the way. With 30% of the budget of committees were underspent. So we are having a meeting tomorrow between the chairs of all committees, as well as the chairs of chairs, to engage on this. So this meeting is, I've just asked last week, myself and Anela just met, and I suggested we must just take all the issues that were not resolved in this last term, that we just flag it for the next term. But we only having this meeting tomorrow. And it's nothing to do with the visits. It's more to do with, for example, all the issues about what the next term. So we are having this meeting of chairs tomorrow only. And this is a draft which therefore, if your wisdom, if you feel you must actually go through it, we can, but this is just for you if you want to. We can't adopt it now because it's subject to tomorrow's meeting as well. But you can input into this process. Members? Yeah? I'm noting trends.
Yes, sir. I am more about performance indicators than anything else, because if as a committee we were to adopt such a stance, we would say, at a particular point, we would say, what did we plan to do and what did we achieve and with what result? So I think really that's what I am about. I think that also the issue of, it's quite welcome, the agenda, but it would be okay if later on there would be somewhere to say these are the performance indicators, so that they all collapse into the strategic plan that we had, to the extent that we would have achieved such. And also the issue of the international tour keeps on going away and coming back, and I think the issue is I'm not understanding what the motivation would be, to the extent that we can all, you kind of contribute to that and make a steadfast proposal in terms of what we need to achieve and what the indicator of success would be. That's really it for me.
Thanks, Chair. I think I agree with Member Fukuza on what she's raising around looking, I think we'd have to evaluate her quota as well. What are the things that we have put in? What is it that we did not achieve and what we anticipate to achieve? But I think, remembering what we had planned, I think majority of the things are we have been able to do, except the study tour, and it's not our making that we ended up with it not happening. But I think the other issue, Chair, which I'm not so sure with the in-depth on skills, what is that? Because there's a decision that we took. I'm assuming that should be the one. There was a decision that we took as a committee around the sitters. I know we spent some time with other sitters, but we have not gone into other sitters as well, being exposed to those. And if this is not it, I would recommend that it be incorporated.
Say that this, we're not going to adopt this now, right? Because we will take it forward in the discussion tomorrow. So I am armed now with a broad kind of draft. But we are asking members to input. If there's anything that's amiss, pass it on to the secretary. Like in this case, that briefing with the seaters independently needs to continue. This is not the same, though. I think the debate was a endeavor to get the voices of the communities, the constituencies, to hear what they are saying about the process, as well as about this
kind of the way the seat is functioning. Because remember, CETAs will tell us it's going that well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However, go to your constituents and ask them how to access, for example, skills funds. Then you will get a different answer. And it's therefore to get the voices of people to be heard in that context. Then can we add that our staff, Anele, the researcher, and Dennis, just to do an assessment of what we set ourselves out to do in the beginning of the second term, and that's both a narrative and just the way you've got your graph here, an assessment on the second term, how the outcomes reached, and the strategic issues that we've identified. You remember we've done it for the first term as well. And then when we are back, that we can get that report as well. And that would include the performance questions that's been posed by Member Vukuza. Because as the staff know, that it's normally just a generic report that they have to give, but we insist that there must be some strategic stuff in it. Good. Members, I think we'll live with that. I want to then really say that enjoy the next few days at the stadiums or at the fan box. Some of us will possibly only reach the fan box, most of us. But enjoy wherever you are and drive safe home. With that, I think the meeting is being concluded, and I think Wip, you'll possibly want to call a few people together after this. Thanks.
Is the ANC caucus? If you can meet.
Please, shall we quickly, because there's another meeting now at 12:30.
I have a meeting with the chiefs at 12:30, so shall we quickly have the discussion?
I think Venus left.
Yesterday we wanted to handle a large meeting, but we were not able to. And the reason for that was, I think, Shannon, we had five apologies.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.